Welcome to Morning Invest. It is Friday, October 23rd. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to see all of you. Welcome to the only progressive business show on the planet. You're not going to find another progressive business show on the anywhere on the planet. My goal is to help you build a more comfortable life, you know, keep more of your own money in your wallet and help protect you from all of these Wall Street vultures that are out there. They're everywhere. And all you needed to do was watch the presidential debate last night to just hear them calling and looking for you. So that's what this show is all about. We try to navigate these business stories and help you keep more of your own money and stay away from these vultures of Wall Street. So we've got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to, of course, be deep diving the latest on the presidential debate. I have my takeaways from last night. Who was a winner? Who was a loser? Did it move the needle at all? What big topics came up that I think were important? What I frankly think a lot of topics were missed last night. The things that I think are most important to the American people, a lot of that was missed, not talked about. That's the last presidential debate. Poll numbers are not looking good for President Trump. Did he do anything to salvage this race? We will talk about that. But I think we're also going to talk about the biggest story of the day right now is coronavirus and the cases surging across the United States. So we will get to that, I think, is the bigger story than what those two old guys on stage talked about last night. So we'll tell you about the latest numbers. We're going to also have a lot of your viewer questions this morning, some great questions from our viewers. And if you would like to ask me a voicemail question, we'll play it right here on the show. If it's, you know, politics, finance, Wall Street, cryptocurrency, real estate, all of those business related things to help you, I'm happy to do it. So all you need to do is come over to our website. Just come to morninginvest.com. And we added a new feature. So first of all, sign up for our mailing list. It's totally free. And you get our mailing newsletter in the first thing delivered to your inbox every morning. It'll take you about 5 minutes to read it. But then over on the right side of your screen here, see this send voicemail option? Now you can send me a voicemail. Try to keep it to like 30 seconds or less and ask me your financial related questions. We're going to get to a bunch of questions today on the show. And I will receive your question and we will play it right here. So great. So again, morninginvest.com. Grover is ready for a good show on this Friday. He thanks you for all of your support. Yesterday was a dog day, by the way. It was a dog holiday. So I shared some pictures on my Instagram of Grover and I yesterday for dog day, celebrating our puppies. But first, let's start with coronavirus. The big story of the morning, I know we're going to get to debate in just the debate in just a few moments, but to me, no bigger story because it affects all of us. It's tied to the economy. It's tied to our jobs. It's tied to our healthcare. And now we're seeing rising cases, the biggest single day record, breaking the United States single day record. These numbers just came out a few minutes ago. 77,640 new coronavirus cases in the United States in one day. Think about that. You're on stage at a presidential debate. President Trump's handling of this coronavirus mess, I mean, it's been an absolute disaster. And I honestly think the reason he's losing and he's going to lose this election is because of his decision in March. His decision in March to basically treat coronavirus as a joke. That's it. That single decision ends his presidency. And now, the day after this debate, we have single day record-breaking numbers, 77,640 new coronavirus cases. The previous high was back in July. This is July numbers we're talking now. 75,000 back in July. Remember the summer when President Trump told us the summer, the heat was going to kill this thing? Didn't happen. And now it's going up. Take a look at these latest numbers across the country. This is incredibly troubling. All of these, I mean, anything in dark brown is exploding coronavirus cases right now. If you're in light brown, you're kind of doing okay. Look at this. New lockdown measures. People being told, do not go out for Halloween. Do not go door to door. Do not send your kids out to try to accept candy from people. I mean, look at these numbers right now. These are just the reported cases in pink here in red. Look at Texas again, Florida. They were in Tennessee last night for the presidential debate. Cases surging in Tennessee. We click over here to the deaths chart. It's sad that we have a chart that goes between cases and deaths. There was 1,100 deaths in the United States just yesterday. And things are not, things are not getting any better in other parts of the world. Europe doubled its cases in one day. Trouble in Spain. The Czech Republic is a hot spot, is like the number one spot right now in Europe. Russia going up. Sweden continues to have spikes. Sweden, which of course tried the we're not going to do anything approach, is now doing something. Italy not doing terribly, but Germany having issues. France having a ton of issues right now. Spain going under further lockdowns. A state of calamity has just been announced in Portugal. They're nowhere nearly as bad as Spain. But all around the world, these cases are popping up again as we head into the fall. And the president last night during the debate wanted to say we're turning a corner. We'll have a vaccine in a few weeks. Everything is good. We're ready to go. I'm immune. I got COVID. I'm fine. Don't be worried about it. So, troubling news on coronavirus cases this morning. And we could see a new round of lockdown measures coming from different states. The problem is, though, we don't have any money and infrastructure put into place from the federal government for any kind of a stimulus to make sure that these businesses can sustain themselves if they have to close down again. Additional PPP or other monies that will help keep them afloat for another amount of time. Any kind of rental assistance, mortgage assistance, none of that. Another piece of news this morning is that families are being crushed by having to deal with the daycare costs now. They leave their jobs, stay home, can't afford the daycare. You know, we don't have the opportunities. And it's affecting men and women equally, according to the recent data. So it was a good thing that last night during the presidential debate, do a recap now of my highlights and takeaways. It was a good thing that during the final presidential debate last night, one of the very first topics to be talked about was COVID-19. We'll get there in a second. But at a 30,000 foot level, I think the debate last night was finally the first debate that we had. This was the first presidential debate that we had. Because the first one was watching like your belligerent, you know, two drunk old uncles yelling at each other and you couldn't understand anything. So we had a mute button in place last night so that after the 2 minutes were up, it would go mute and you couldn't hear anyone talking. I thought the mute button was fantastic. There were a few times when it had to be used, but most of the time, see, they had a big clock in front of them that they were staring at. They saw 2 minutes. They knew they only had 10 seconds left, so they should wrap up what they're saying. Otherwise, they're going to be muted. So they did a good job. President Trump was more reserved last night. He listened and responded, which is when actually he's effective. Problem is when he's just yelling and interrupting, he looks like a belligerent uncle. And that had a really adverse effect on his poll numbers after the last debate. So last night he actually listened and then pounced, you know, ingested what Joe Biden said and then went after him. I thought Kristen Welker did an amazing job. She was the debate moderator last night. I thought she did a great job. She was a star. She really kept things on track. She asked interesting follow-up questions. She didn't let it go off the rails, I think, you know, but there was quite a bit of questions that I wish she would have asked that if, she, you know, if she's picking these questions, there's things that were missing from this debate last night, of course, like they always are. But all in all, I thought it was actually a good debate. We actually let them debate issues back and forth. That's one of my biggest frustrations about these debates in the past is that they, you know, they do these debates, but they don't actually debate. We call them a debate, but we don't actually hear anybody going back and forth on a particular issue, different worldviews. So we actually had some back and forth last night on some different issues. Crime bill, COVID-19, taxes, healthcare, Social Security, different worldviews, race. I think this, you think that, let's debate. Very often these debates over the past 20 years have just been, I'll ask a question, and then I'm going to ask you the question, but I'm not going to let you interact with each other. What fun is that? So at least at a high level, we got a debate. This is the last one, though. It was down there in Nashville, Tennessee, of course, which has seen a spike in COVID cases and coronavirus cases through the South and through the Midwest, which they're suffering from right now. By the way, as Joe Biden pointed out, not blue states. So this idea of like blue state bailout is a total joke. because a lot of these red states are suffering big time right now with budget shortfalls. They cannot pay these bills, first responders, firefighters, police officers, etc. Joe Biden got to bring that up last night. But the very first question had to do about COVID, as it should have been, and your response to COVID-19. This should have been an opportunity, I think, for Joe to really attack President Trump on his response. I think this has been a huge disaster by all accounts. I think he did a pretty good job. But I think even President Trump's ridiculous response did more damage to him last night with his COVID response. I'm immune. It's fine. Listen, here is the COVID response last night from President Trump.
Be specific. How would you lead the country during this next stage of the coronavirus crisis? 2 minutes uninterrupted.
So, as you know, 2.2 million people modeled out were expected to die. We closed up the greatest economy in the world in order to fight this horrible disease that came from China. It's a worldwide pandemic. It's all over the world. You see the spikes in Europe and many other places right now. If you notice, the mortality rate is down 85%. The excess mortality rate is way down and much lower than almost any other country. And we're fighting it, and we're fighting it hard. There is a spike. There was a spike in Florida, and it's now gone. There was a very big spike in Texas. It's now gone. There was a very big spike in Arizona. It's now gone. And there are some spikes and surges in other places. They will soon be gone. We have a vaccine that's coming. It's ready. It's going to be announced within weeks, and it's going to be delivered. We have Operation Warp Speed, which is the military is going to distribute the vaccine. I can tell you from personal experience that I was in the hospital. I had it. And I got better, and I will tell you that I had something that they gave me, a therapeutic, I guess they would call it. Some people could say it was a cure. But I was in for a short period of time, and I got better very fast, or I wouldn't be here tonight. And now they say I'm immune, whether it's for...
I'm immune. So there you go. It's going to go away. You don't have to worry about it. It's going to go away, and I'm immune. And a vaccine is coming in a matter of weeks, which goes against... even what his top health officials say is happening, that we're not going to see a vaccine in a few weeks. Probably won't see it until 2021. Okay. So she pushed him on that. Is it going to be a few weeks? Well, it might be a few weeks. It'll be soon. I think it'll be sooner than what my own administration is telling people it'll be. Okay. I'm immune now. I might be permanently immune, or I might only be immune for 4 months. I don't know, but it's not that bad. You shouldn't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And then Joe Biden pounced all over that, reminding people that, 220,000 Americans are dead. And the predictions are that another 200,000 could die before the end of this year. So over 400,000 Americans dead by the end of this year. Not a big deal, I suppose. Not much of a big deal. So that was one of the big moments. Then we all were wondering what was going to happen on Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son. Would President Trump pounce all over this? Now, the interesting sort of sidebar politics on all of this is that throughout the day in the previous days, in the run-up to this debate, there were concerns from the Trump administration that President Trump was going to spend almost the whole night trying to talk about Hunter Biden in Ukraine and the laptop. But there have been a number of advisors who have been telling President Trump, don't do it. First of all, it's a complicated subject, and Americans don't care. They don't understand it, and they don't care about Hunter Biden. They care about their own families. They care about food on their table, health care, coronavirus, stimulus. Are they going to be able to pay their bills? They don't care about Hunter Biden. So don't spend the entire debate talking about Hunter Biden. Even Governor Huckabee. Governor Huckabee tweeting about this. He said, I hope the president doesn't talk about this or spend very much time talking about it at all. It's complicated, and the American people don't care. Frank Luntz, Republican pollster and advisor, said the very same thing. American people don't care. I think it's the same thing about Trump's taxes, really. American people mostly don't care about Trump's taxes at all. The only reason they would care is if they try to relate to how much they pay compared to him. That's it. But to dwell on this for too much time takes away from the real issues. And Grover agrees with me. But it did come up. And Vice President Biden tried to deflect criticism of it as best, I guess, as he could. And then they moved on. But President Trump wasn't going to let it go. But here's this Hunter Biden exchange last night that's worth listening to.
Joe, and they say you get some of it, and you do live very well. You have houses all over the place. You live very well.
All right, gentlemen, let me just ask some questions about all of this broadly. Vice President Biden, there have been questions about the work your son has done in China and for a Ukrainian energy company when you were vice president. In retrospect, was anything about those relationships inappropriate or unethical?
Nothing was unethical. Here's what the deal. With regard to Ukraine, we had this whole question about whether or not, because he was on the board, I later learned, of a Burisma, a company, that somehow I had done something wrong. Yet every single solitary person, when he was going through his impeachment, testifying under oath, who worked for him, said, I did my job impeccably. I carried out U.S. policy. Not one single solitary thing was out of line. Not a single thing, number one. Number two, the guy who got in trouble in Ukraine was this guy trying to bribe the Ukrainian government to say something negative about me, which they would not do and did not do because it never, ever, ever happened. My son has not made money in terms of this thing about, what are you talking about, China. I have not had it. The only guy made money from China is this guy. He's the only one. Nobody else has made money from China.
Never President Trump, let me ask my question to you.
But could I just one thing?
Very quickly.
His son didn't have a job for a long time, was sadly no longer in the military service. I won't get into that. And he didn't have a job. As soon as he became vice president, Burisma, not the best reputation in the world, I hear they paid him $183,000 a month. Listen to this. $183,000, and they gave him a $3 million upfront payment.
All right.
And he had no energy.
I'm going to let the vice president respond to that quickly, and then I need to get to a question to you.
No basis for that. Everybody investigated that. No one said anything he did was wrong in Ukraine.
Okay, President.
So no discussion about the veracity of the emails, no denial of this. There's still no denial from Vice President Biden or Hunter Biden on the veracity of these emails, whether or not they're real. No denial that they're real. So that's all we got on that. And I thought President Trump was fairly restrained on it, but he went after him on it. And these are legitimate questions. But again, I mean, all of these guys are cut from the same cloth. They're all getting paid under the table, having houses built for them. I mean, it's like you really don't think Mitch McConnell's, you know, the whole reason he doesn't want to bring a stimulus package before the Senate, all of his big energy money that's paying for him. I mean, these are all swamp creatures. Pretend all you want, President Trump, that you're not tied in and just as corrupt as these other guys. They're all part of the same thing. But again, the American people just are so sick of it and are tired of hearing about it. They want to know, what are you going to do for us? Are you going to fix healthcare? Are you going to fix our schools? Are you going to pass a stimulus? Those are the things that matter to the American people, not Hunter Biden, not President Trump's taxes. Although those came up, of course. So here is President Trump defending his taxes. We have to be fair. Played Hunter Biden. Now we'll play the taxes. Here's President Trump defending himself only paying $750 in taxes.
Foreign source ever in my life. We learned that this president paid 50 times the tax in China, has a secret bank account with China, does business in China, and in fact is talking about me taking money. I have not taken a single penny from any country whatsoever, ever. Number one. Number two, this is a president. I have released all of my tax returns, 22 years. Go look at them. 22 years of my tax return. You have not released a single solitary year of your tax return. What are you hiding? Why are you unwilling? The foreign countries are paying you a lot. Russia's paying you a lot. China's paying you a lot. And your hotels and all your businesses all around the country. All around the world. And China's building a new road to a new a golf course you have overseas. So what's going on here? Why don't release your tax return or stop talking about corruption?
President Trump, your response.
First of all, I called my accountants, underwrote it. I'm going to release them as soon as we can. I want to do it. And it'll show how successful, how great this company is. But Much more importantly than that, people were saying $750. I asked them a week ago, I said, what did I pay? They said, sir, you prepaid tens of millions of dollars. I prepaid my tax. Tens over the last number of years. Tens of millions of dollars I prepaid because at some point they think it's an estimate. They think I may have to pay tax. So I already prepaid it. Nobody told me that.
Did your accountant Nobody tell you, when you that? Can release
Excuse
them?
Me. And it wasn't written whenever they write this. They keep talking about $750, which I think is a filing fee. But let me just tell you, I prepaid millions and millions of dollars in taxes. Number one.
Okay. You're president of the United States. There's no such thing as a filing fee. When you pay your taxes, you don't have to pay a fee to file your taxes. A $750 filing fee? That doesn't exist. Come on, man. If Joe was with it, if he was awake, he would have jumped on that. There were so many missed opportunities last night. I mean, there were so many missed opportunities. There was missed opportunities for President Trump to go after Biden on certain issues. He got some zingers in on the crime bill. Of course, Vice President Biden, when he was in the Senate, voted for the crime bill in 1994. That has been just devastating to black communities, black community. And Biden admitted it was a mistake. The law is a mistake. That's why I'm trying to change it. So we got him to say that at least. It was a mistake. That's why I've been fighting now for drug reform, that he should not be locked up for drugs or any kind of drugs. Good. That's what we finally, hopefully, we're learning our lesson here on drug use. Follow the lead. I've mentioned, Europe and what they do. Mentioned Portugal. They have zero drug crime. Why? Because they eliminated it as being illegal. Instead of going to jail, you get treatment. And that's what Joe Biden was talking about last night. Good. Now let's see if we can get it done. Biden missed some opportunities to go after Trump on these very same issues. He could have jumped on that. Instead of $750 filing fee, it's free to pay your taxes. $750 filing fee. You don't know what you're talking about. And you kept telling us you're going to release these taxes year after year after year. I had to talk to my accountant. I'd like to release them, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to. I don't know when, till this audit is done. Meanwhile, the IRS says the audit's done. You can release them. Okay. You see how successful this company really is. That's what he says. Okay. President Trump missed some opportunities to go after Biden. Why he has these beautiful houses. Nothing illegal necessarily, but when people do, scratch your back as a senator, I'll scratch mine. I'll build you a nice house. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's what all these guys do. How many times we hear about these senators with these huge houses? Like, how they do that? Oh. They're all corrupt. I think watching this debate last night just reminded me, I tweeted this morning. I just said, I feel like the takeaways were, hey, Kristen Welker did a great job. We're reminded how the American people are continuing to get shafted. No discussion last night about labor. Three debates and no discussion about labor. How is that possible? When workers right now are being destroyed, middle class is being destroyed, no discussion about labor. Labor unions, workers' rights, nothing. And yet, people think, oh, labor unions, they're going out of style. Republicans really crapped all over those for years. No. In fact, 67% of Americans support it. Yeah, 67% of Americans. And guess what? Republicans, 67% of Republicans support labor unions and workers' rights. No discussion of it. No question from a moderator on this. And all of these workers who have had to end up going to these jobs and getting COVID-19 because they're, quote, essential workers with no rights, and they've had their hours slashed, healthcare slashed, and they're on the front lines getting COVID with no support from the federal government. No question during the debates last night on that question. There were some other questions, though, that did come up that were more important than Joe Biden's or Hunter Biden and taxes. And that was on ridiculous moments around what the American family is suffering from right now. And President Trump loves to continue to talk about the stock market and how the stock market is going to crash if you don't vote for me. He brought it up again last night, probably not watching my show. We've talked about how ridiculous that statement is, because it's going to crash regardless of who's president. All the signs are there of it being an overinflated bubble stock market right now with the amount of money that the government is printing. It doesn't matter who's president. So here is President Trump last night once again touting the stock market and why we should be so happy and thankful that he's president, because the stock market will continue to rise.
Come on. He tried to get rid of it. He tried to hurt Social Security years ago. Years ago. Go back and look at the records. He tried to hurt Social Security years ago.
All right, let's move on. I'm going to move on. Let me, Mr. President, I have to move on to the next question.
They said the stock market will boom if I'm elected. If he's elected, the stock market will crash.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. Very quickly.
Look, the idea that the stock market is booming is his only measure of what's happening. Where I come from in Scranton and Claymont, the people don't live off of the stock market. Just in the last three years during this crisis, the billionaires in this country made, according to the Wall Street, $700 billion more. $700 billion more, because that's his only measure. What happens to the ordinary people out there? What happens to them?
Let's talk about what's happening on Capitol Hill. We're going to move on.
401ks are through the roof.
We're going to move on. People's
stock are through the roof.
So once again, I talk about these 401ks and the stock market being through the roof. Do you feel that? Like, does that affect you at all? 401k going up? And then it drops the next day, 400 points? Remember, the stock market went down 400 points the other day. So if your retirement is tied to a 401k, you're in trouble. If all of your eggs are in a 401k basket, you're in trouble, as the stock market is going to collapse. But President Trump's, I think this was a good moment from Vice President Biden on the tax, on the 401k issue and stock market. Most Americans don't care about the stock market. And furthermore, the stock market doesn't reward a president. Stock market rewards itself. Stock market right now, the only reason it's up right now, I'll tell you why it's up this morning. There's not even a stimulus deal on the table. Nothing. So why is the stock market up this morning? And coronavirus cases are spiking. So if that's your measure of success, we just had a breakthrough, 77,000 coronavirus cases in one day. No sign of a stimulus. An economic backslide we're seeing in the United States. Europe is now showing growth declines in Germany, France, showing signs of an economic backspin right now, world economies going backwards, and the stock market is going up. It's totally it's totally not connected to reality. And that's why I do this show, because, you know, as a progressive business show, the stock market is not connected to you. It rewards businesses laying people off. Remember, I've talked about it. You know, MGM, right? Here's a perfect example. MGM lays people off and their stock goes up, because now in the eyes of Wall Street, they're better off now. They've cut a bunch of people's salaries. That's a better company to invest in. Now people buy MGM. That's what happens. Wall Street rewards unemployment. They're not rewarded for hiring all kinds of people in research and development. They're rewarded for buying their own shares back. They're rewarded for laying people off. That's how they're rewarded. That's the success of Wall Street right now. So, you know, Joe could have been a little bit more on target coming out on that point. But I think he got there eventually. He's having to look down at his talking points and, you know, get it there. It's not as snappy as he could have been on a lot of things last night. But this Wall Street thing really drives me nuts. I mean, just to give you an example right now, Europe's index gained 0.7% by 5 this morning, by 5 a.m. this morning. S&P 500 futures are pointing already up this morning. How is that possible? The 10-year Treasury yield was also up. Gold was going up. Japan's index was higher. All the Asia markets this morning were up. Stock market is not tied to reality. And it's not tied to your kitchen table. So there was another big thing that came up last night, of course, on race. And this was like the moment, I think, that made the headlines last night. This was towards the end of the debate, where President Trump is claiming to be the least racist president in history. He says, maybe up against Abraham Lincoln, but I'm the least racist president in American history, or in modern American history. Okay. Really? Okay. So here was that moment last night on race and Vice President Biden's retort.
Described the Black Lives Matter movement as a symbol of hate. You've shared a video of a man chanting white power to millions of your supporters. You've said that black professional athletes exercising their First Amendment rights should be fired. What do you say to Americans who say that kind of language from a president is contributing to a climate of hate and racial strife?
Well, you have to understand, the first time I ever heard of Black Lives Matter, they were chanting pigs in a blanket, talking about police. Pigs. Pigs, talking about our police. Pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. I said, that's a horrible thing. And they were marching down the street. And that was my first glimpse of Black Lives Matter. I thought it was a terrible thing. As far as my relationships with all people, I think I have great relationships with all people. I am the least racist person in this room.
Well, what do you say to Americans who are concerned by that rhetoric?
I don't know.
I don't
know what to say. I got criminal justice reform done and prison reform and opportunity zones. I took care of black colleges and universities. I don't know what to say. They can say anything. I mean, they can say anything. It makes me sad.
I don't know what to say. I'm so surprised by it all. I don't know what to say. I'm surprised. You know, when the Charlottesville riots happened and white supremacists slammed into people and killed people, I didn't know what to say. Woe is me. 48 hours later, I finally said, you know, there are bad people on both sides.
Come on, man.
Okay.
Because I am the least racist person. I can't even see the audience because it's so dark, but I don't care who's in the audience. I'm the least racist person in this room.
If I could look out there, I could see some people of color, and I don't know, but I still think, you know, I can't see with the lights. I think I see a black guy. I think I see a white guy. I'm less racist than they are. Just, that's how I am. Who would say something like that? If you have to justify your level of racism. I can't see. It's pretty dark out there. Well, John, I know John. He's pretty racist. So I'm definitely not as racist as John. Is that Don Jr. out there? Can't see too well. Is that the ghost of Herman Cain out there? Too soon. I'm the least racist person in this room. I'm the least racist president. Oh, so good.
Okay, Vice President Biden, Abraham, let me ask you very quickly, and then I have a follow-up question for you.
Abraham Lincoln here is one of the most racist presidents we've had in modern history. He pours fuel on every single racist fire, every single one. Started off his campaign coming down the escalator saying he's going to get rid of those Mexican rapists. He's banned Muslims because they're Muslims. He has moved around and made everything worse across the board. He says about the poor boys, last time we were on stage here, he said, I told him to stand down and stand ready. Come on. This guy is a dog whistle about as big as a foghorn.
President Trump, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to respond, and then I have a follow-up.
He made a reference to Abraham Lincoln. Where did that come in? I mean,
you said you're Abraham Lincoln.
No, where did that? No.
You said,
I said, not since Abraham Lincoln has anybody done what I've done for the black community.
And I'm saying,
I didn't say I'm Abraham Lincoln. I said, not since Abraham Lincoln has anybody done what I've done for the black community? Now, you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, do you remember the Civil Rights Act? You just gloss over that period. Since Abraham Lincoln. Where'd that come in? Because you brought it up. You keep bringing it up. You keep bringing it up on the campaign trail repeatedly. Anyway, those are some of my big takeaways last night. Again, I think some big misses last night. I think, again, on the environment. We wait till the very end of the debate to have a discussion about the environment. And I think finally, I think Joe kind of bumbled his way through his responses on the environment. He did not engender any real confidence from a progressive side that this is going to be a president that's going to move the needle on the environment in any kind of meaningful way. He said some great things last night that we haven't heard him talk about before. He talked about, in fact, ending the oil industry. And President Trump said, "Whoa, did you just say that?" I said, "Yeah," and he didn't back off on it. I always thought it was going to be like a senior moment or something. But he said, "Yes, we have to move away from to renewable energy sources. Hallelujah! So we can move away from the oil industry eventually." Great. He said something that's uncomfortable for a Democrat to say. Hallelujah, Joe. Good. I bet your oil buddies and all your big energy companies aren't going to like that, though. But that was a moment last night, and President Trump, of course, pounced on it because he knows there's big oil money floating around in both parties. But Joe Biden said, "Yeah, we have to move," and he's right. We do. If we want to stop this climate change, we have to do that. We have to move towards renewable energy for our future. I think, you know, President Trump, it was clear. I mean, the environment's going to get shafted probably either way, because I don't see Joe Biden doing anything really meaningful on the environment. He'll pay lip service to it, but, you know, he's not going to get rid of fracking. He says, we're going to try to contain the gases and the emissions from fracking. So you're going to spend billions of dollars to work on containers for fracking instead of eliminate it and move towards solar and wind energy. I thought President Trump had some good knowledgeable moments on wind, by the way, wind energy, talking about the emissions that are used to create these wind farms, the amount that goes into it. You know, we don't even know how to recycle these windmills, these giant 100-yard-long wind turbines, whatever you call them, wheelies, I don't know. What is it? What's the name for a pinwheel? Turbine. Is that what it is? The big, yeah, the dingus that sticks out. Thank you, Philip. We don't know how to recycle those. They just sit there. We don't have any way to recycle these things. So I thought President Trump actually showed some pretty strong knowledge on that stuff. But again, labor was short shrifted in all three debates. No talk about workers' rights when our middle class has been destroyed. Decimated. I also, last night, healthcare, I left there thinking, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. I felt like, exactly, door. I don't know what the heck they're talking about on healthcare. I left there more confused. And Joe, using all of his sort of Washington speak about public option, this and this and that, people's eyes glaze over. Am I going to have healthcare or not? Am I going to lose my healthcare? Are you taking a... What's going to happen? And President Trump going after him on socialized medicine, as if that's so bad, by the way. I love this sort of vilification of socialized medicine. President Trump basically saying last night, I'm going to keep socialism away from your Social Security. Which, like, you literally, that was said last night. Do you know what Social Security is? It's a social safety net. It is, by all accounts, a socialist program. I'm going to keep government out of your Social Security. What? This idea that we're going to keep vilifying socialism. Okay. People want to point to Norway and these other countries. They're not socialist countries. They're market economies. They have a form of socialized medicine that provides the safety net for people and takes care of people, even if they lose a job. Other countries don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to be able to pay their medical bills if they lose their job. We're the richest country in the world. And I think if Joe Biden really wanted to grab all of these progressives that are just waiting for him to say something like that, all of these old Bernie supporters that are just waiting around because they really can't stand this corporatist Biden, they don't want to vote up for anyone because they think Trump's corrupt and a sociopath, and they think Biden is just bought and sold corporate Democrat and not going to do anything. If he really wanted to grab these people by the, you know, by the legs last night, he could have said, you know what? I've really thought about it. I really come around on this. I want to create Medicare for all. I want it. We're going to go all in on it. I've been talking to Bernie Sanders. I've been listening to him. I've been feeling it. I've been hearing from my progressives on the left. We're going to do it big. You would have like people cheering, you know, because close to 70% of Americans support it. So it's not an unfavorable position. It's unfavorable among Washington Republicans to talk this way, you know, for Ted Cruz and the Ben Shapiro types of the world to tell you how it's crazy to talk about socialized medicine. Yeah. But just look around and see how effective it actually is in the world. And when millions of Americans are on the chopping block to lose their health insurance, why are we afraid to talk about it? Stop vilifying this. Stop pretending you even know what you're talking about when you vilify this. You just throw around this word. You don't actually know. You haven't experienced that system. Have you ever been outside of the United States? Can't stand when people literally have never traveled the world. They have no idea what they're talking about. And all they do is take a Rush Limbaugh soundbite and vilify it. Really, how's it working out for you right now with no healthcare that you don't have? To have some sort of a safe... how much do we rely on Social Security? Can you imagine if Social Security was gone, which by all accounts it will be very soon? Can you imagine how many millions of Americans would be sunk right into poverty, unable to pay for groceries, their rent, anything? So you get to pick and choose what you want to vilify here. Anyway, sorry for my little rant. But those are some of my takeaways last night from the presidential debate. No more debates. There are only 11 days left, folks. 11 days. Can you believe that? Until Election Day. 40 million Americans have already voted as of this morning. And, you know, I thought one thing that came up last night that barely got touched on was the stimulus. I was surprised that it even came up. Kristen Welker pushed President Trump on this a little bit. You know, you're the president. Why aren't you, can you get this done? Mitch McConnell said he's not going to do it. He's not going to sign anything. And he immediately spun it around to Nancy Pelosi. But then she pushed him on this about Mitch McConnell piece, who says he's not going to do it. And he said, no, if we get a bill, he'll do it. He'll do it. Okay. You believe that? Mitch McConnell is not going to pass a stimulus bill. He's not. So you can keep dreaming all you want. Then Krista Welker asked him, Joe Biden, about the stimulus. Hey, you're the head of the Democratic Party right now. Can you not push your Democrats to get a stimulus bill through? And he said, and he flipped out, said, I did. I have. And by the way, there is a HEROES Act sitting on the Senate's desk since May, and they haven't done anything with it. So a lot of fireworks last night. I'm good that we actually had a debate instead of the two crazy uncles yelling at each other. I don't know that it moved the needle at all. I do think President Trump won this debate last night. I think if you had to look at what needed to be accomplished for these candidates, I think President Trump won on that. He didn't look like a belligerent fool last night like he did there in the first debate. I think he was measured in his response, and I think he helped remind some of the people, maybe some of those undecided voters who don't, maybe they voted for him last time, they're not sure this time because they think he went off the reservation, maybe. Maybe this reminds them of why. Because he played the I'm not from Washington card last night repeatedly. He kept saying, you politicians, you're all the same. You're a politician now. This is your administration the past 3 years. So trying to play, I'm the outsider, but I'm also the insider. I don't know that it works. I don't know that you get to pass the buck on your coronavirus failures to other people. But in the end, I think he ended up looking more effective during this debate. I think Joe Biden, on the opportunities where he had to really go after him, he got some zingers in. There were no knockout punches last night. But I think where Joe Biden had the opportunity to really nail it on some issues, like on the environment, on COVID, I think he just he bumbled around. And look, I know that he has a stuttering issue. That's not what that was last night. I think he was he just was looking through his notes. He felt like a little lost to me. Just how it looked to me. I think overall, President Trump maybe won by a slim margin, did what he needed to do. Honestly, what he needed to do was not look crazy because so many people were fed up. The real question I have is, though, 40 million people have already voted since the last debate. So that first debate left such a foul taste in people's mouths. People are like, I don't want this guy in my living room for the next 4 years. So then people went out and voted one way. And now we have this final presidential debate, and so many people have already voted. I don't know that it moves the needle. So we'll have to wait a few days till we see the post-debate polls to see how President Trump has done. But it is neck and neck in so many races now. The fact that Texas is even in play. Did you hear President Trump last night kind of pleading Texas and Pennsylvania? He's like, Joe Biden wants to kill the oil industry. Texas, did you hear me? Pennsylvania, did you hear me? Because he knows. So tight in those states right now. What are your thoughts on the debate last night? Let me know in the chat. I would love to hear your thoughts. By the way, today is a members-only chat day. So our members can chat today. So thank you to all of our channel members. We have 8 new channel members since the show began. Thank you so much. If you'd like to become a channel member, it's very easy to do. Just go to morninginvest.com/join. It lets you support our show. Sunshine says, I think Joe got confused or lost his thought. Yeah, I think that's, yeah, exactly. Thank you, morninginvest.com/join. So people were asking last night about the coyote and the immigration piece, you know, calling people coyotes. Well, coyote is the name given to those, like, you know, those people that bring in drugs, bringing people across the border for that reason. Gang members, etc. That's how that came up last night. Trula Klein is a new channel member. Thank you so much. And if you become a channel member, your name should pop up right here. So I think Trula's name just popped up here. So thank you so much for becoming a channel member. Grover thanks you as well. Very, very happy. There's Trula Klein, new channel member. I appreciate that. So we got a bunch of good questions from our viewers yesterday. So thank you for sending in your voicemail questions. I want to play a few now on some different financial questions. Yes, exactly. Corey Jernigan, you've summed it up better than I did. Coyote is a term given to people that are hired by cartels to move people and drugs across the border. Exactly. Grover doesn't like that term. Doesn't like that term. All right, let's listen to Kimberly. Kimberly has a question. Let's play Kimberly's question here and get her and get some feedback.
Good morning, Clayton. This is Kimberly from St. Petersburg, Florida. I'm intrigued with the cryptocurrency, but I don't understand what it means when people say that they mine cryptocurrency. Can you explain that, please?
Thank you, Kimberly, for that question. Oh, look what just arrived. Our new sweatshirts just arrived. Look at this. Yes. Literally just came in the mail, didn't it? Sweet. Yes, our new Morning Invest hoodies. Super excited about that. Our new eco-conscious collection. See? Eco-conscious. So it's sustainably made and sourced. Good for the environment. Not bad for the environment. You can get that in our store, by the way. So, Kimberly, thank you for your mining question. Let me tell you what, it is not an easy question to answer. on the cryptocurrency front. I mean, it's very complicated to explain it like the way that, like, if I'm talking to a 40-year-old, it's incredibly complicated to explain. And I don't even fully understand it at all. Explaining it to a 5-year-old is even difficult to explain. If I was going to try to explain it to my son, who's 10, I'd have a difficult time explaining it. So on the mining front, what happens is you can buy cryptocurrency one way, which is to, you can get access to cryptocurrency one way, which is to buy it, right? Or someone gives it to you. The other way to get cryptocurrency, to get, we're going to talk about Bitcoin specifically because it's most popular. Let's talk about it in terms of Bitcoin, BTC. Another way to get Bitcoin is to actually mine it yourself, get it paid for mining. And that's how you'd get paid for doing all of this electronic work. Basically, you'd have to set up some really intense computers and really high energy use computer systems. It can be as cheap as $500. Some people spend tens of thousands of dollars setting up these computer systems. Think of it this way. Someone gives you a dollar bill, okay? And on that dollar bill, there's a serial number at the bottom of that bill. What you would have to do to mine, to earn Bitcoin by doing mining, is basically you're taking two serial numbers from two types of... this is not a good way to explain it. Am I explaining? Basically, you're trying to match these two numbers, making sure that you're not spending the same dollar twice. And that's how you get rewarded, right? So Natalie has a good explanation here. You want to jump in on this?
Sure. Don't mind if I do. Okay. So Bitcoin is mined by verifying transactions, microtransactions. So if you think about it, like Bitcoin is like a shared Google spreadsheet, right? Mm-hmm. So people are sending little bits of data together and someone mines it by verifying these open transactions. So tiny little transactions are happening and then someone goes in and verifies them open source. That's why every transaction in Bitcoin is
public.
Public, yes. And that's why, and this is done on blockchain. So blockchain is the technology of this, let's say, open Google spreadsheet. And that's why it can be used to, say, track the supply chain of a vaccine, right? Mm-hmm. It can be used to track the supply chain of, for instance, when we had the E. coli outbreak in lettuce, they started using blockchain to verify every time a piece of lettuce or a head of lettuce, I guess, not individual leaves, was moved from place to place so you could track the virus, right, where it had been and where it's going. And so it's used in supply chain and also in currency. And you mine a bit of currency by getting in there and verifying these transactions. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps. And it's very difficult. Thank you so much. That's very difficult to get rewarded for it because so many other people are basically trying to verify the same transaction.
But also it's finite.
Yes, it's finite.
So you need, for instance, Bitcoin is very slow, even with the best computing power. It can only handle about 3 transactions per minute, whereas Visa can handle like 25,000 per minute. So it's slow and you need some really supercomputing. And it's also quite bad for the environment when you think about the
amount of energy that's used,
the amount of server power that's used to do it. But in theory, we will soon run out of Bitcoins. You won't be able to mine them anymore.
So, right.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I know it's complicated because...
I'll mine my own business now.
Go mine your own business. No, thank you for that. Yes, waste of... Betty Boop says, I still don't understand. I know. So let me explain it this way. You have $2 bills, right? One of them is counterfeit. One of them is real. I'm the miner. I'm verifying that one of them is real by matching a serial number. So I've got both of these bills, the $10 bill that's real, the $10 bill that's counterfeit. And I'm looking at the serial number on the bottom of that bill. And I'm looking at it like, ah, this one's correct. Right. And then I verify that this one's the correct transaction. And then I basically approve that transaction inside the blockchain. And if I'm the miner that got the go ahead, hey, I'm the one that figured that out, then I'm rewarded with BTC. I get a percentage of Bitcoin paid back to me as the miner. It's like the gold rush of the 1849. in California. If you're the one that actually went out to California with your pickaxe and did all the work, it's a lot of work. You might be the one to get a big gold nugget, or instead you could actually just buy, you could actually just buy the gold itself and invest in gold.
Here's a good introduction. Can we zoom in on this?
I can't zoom.
Okay, I know.
You just have to hold it up.
So here's some reading. I will put a link in the chat for you in a bit. This is a really good book. It helps you to understand not only what it is, but how it can be used, and how it may eventually be used by our government to tokenize our existing money. So, okay, I really will get out of here. Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's good stuff. I know. Good stuff. Okay. Man, you even calmed Grover down with that talk. It's like, wow, that, it's like all of that Bitcoin talk just makes me sleepy. Makes me super sleepy. Now, Randy Spencer says outlets not available in Virginia. I'm sorry to hear that. Bitcoin value is not based on anything tangible, Levi Matthews says. Well, is the US dollar? What's tangible about a US dollar? But you just said that in the chat. Now neither is our dollars. We're starting to look very similar. Well, they say as couples, you know, spend a lot of time together, they start to look similar. I literally saw a couple, an older couple the other day walking. And they both were walking and they both just had their mouths open like the exact same. And they're like, every feature on their face looked the same. I thought, man, is that what's going to happen? Like they were both like walking like this. And they both just looked the same. I was like, oh my gosh, we're heading for that. All right, I'll put that link in the chat. Okay, next question here. We have another question. This one from John Shanks. John, are you watching today? John has a question. John, who's a longtime channel member.
Morning, Clayton. This is John Shanks from Hanover, Maryland. Was just curious. I plan to pay off the three biggest pieces of debt I have, and what I plan to do is pay one off, take that one amount, divide it by the other two, and get those paid off to try to pay it off faster. Wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Thank you, John. So you want to pay off that one, divided by the other two. Okay. I think, again, I kind of go back and forth with on this in debate, and it kind of goes back to my snowball versus avalanche discussion the other day, to pay off debt. The logical, more rational approach, right, is to look at that, your debts, and say, okay, what's the higher interest rate? And go after that. Go after, put all of your weight behind going after the highest interest rate. That's the avalanche approach. The way that I successfully paid off debt was the snowball method, by tackling the lowest hanging, smallest amount first to get a win. And I know we can have discussions back and forth about what makes more sense. I think logically, more rationally, to go after the highest interest rate makes more sense. But the way that the human brain works is that we are rewarded for small wins. Again, when you download an iPhone app, a game, and kids download Roblox or one of these other iPhone games, the reason that the first few levels are so easy to win is because they want you to get to the harder levels where you then need to start paying for special, you know, special Robux dollars and special suits of armor and things like that. Because you got those early wins. If you lost the first time you ever played, you're probably not going to launch that game again. It's all psychology. They know that. App developers, game developers know that. That's why they want you to get so many coins when you first start playing. Small victories. And the human brain works that way. We want rewards. Like if you've started a new business, you've started a new, entrepreneurial endeavor. Let's say you start a new YouTube channel, right? Like I started my new paranormal post YouTube channel. And because I got some early wins, because I saw a lot of people were really enjoying it, they started watching it, It's made me want to create more content there. And if people just didn't watch it and people weren't tuning into it and it just was defeating and I'm like, God, I'm putting all this work into this and no one's enjoying it. Guess what? It's very hard to keep going. And the same thing is true with paying off debt. So I think it's a good approach, John, if you can stick with it. Anytime you're putting all of your effort and focus into paying off those high interest credit card debts, going after those and attacking them is very, very important. I mean, that's the definition of bad debt, right? Credit card debt is bad debt. And here's where I totally disagree with Dave Ramsey. You know, I think all debt's bad debt. I think there is good debt and bad debt. And credit card debt, if mishandled, is the worst. So again, I like the snowball method. It worked for me. I'm speaking from experience. It was how I was able to pay off close to $100,000 in debt by going after the smallest amounts first. Okay. You know, $1,700 limit on that one card and I had $7,000 on another. Well, I went after that $1,700 one, cut that card up. And every time I did it, I cut a card up and it was so exciting. So that's the approach that's worked for me. The way that the human brain works. I like those little rewards. Here's another question this morning. Do we have any, do you want to throw some up on the screen too, Philip? Okay. Sure. Whatever you want, whatever's, yeah. Sure. Maria Davis. Yeah. Snowball was your preferred method. Mine too. Allie Hodges, small victories, got to celebrate those. That's why I like that method. Exactly. I like that you have a cat around your neck. DS says, can I make up my own cryptocurrency? I think you can. So many people have tried. There's so many different forms of cryptocurrency. Absolutely. Stephanie Gazelle, so if we're just starting to better our financial situation, should we be buying Bitcoin? I admit I'm very stupid about financial things. Stephanie, you've got to download our free bootcamp. Just go to morninginvest.com/bootcamp. It's totally free. It's a 90-day financial freedom bootcamp. We take you week by week how to get your financial house in order. morninginvest.com/bootcamp. Download that. Read it. Follow it week by week. This will really help you, okay? So, Stephanie, I wouldn't put the cart before the horse. You need to first understand your family's budget. You need to understand a balance sheet. You need to understand, performing assets versus liabilities. All of those really foundational things before you jump into Bitcoin or the stock market or real estate. Thank you for your super chat, Ocean Brats. Thank you so much. David Goliath says, a theory, what if our stimulus money is being used to prop up the stock market? Well, in a lot of ways it is. Where do you think all this money's coming? I mean, the Federal Reserve has added about $6 trillion to its balance sheets in the past few months. They're just printing money and they're bailing out Wall Street. They're buying up corporate junk bonds on Wall Street. They're buying up all of these mortgage-backed securities, all of this junk that Wall Street doesn't want. And they've said they're going to continue to do it through 2023 and beyond. They're spending about $80 billion right now a month buying up this stuff and supporting Wall Street. And we're quibbling over $1,200 stimulus? Come on. Thank you, David, for your question. Christine Finley says, I want to move around my 401k. Am I taxed due to federal COVID-19 law? I want to move around. Well, under the CARES Act, so you need to talk to your accountant about this or talk to your employer. Ask them about your company's provisions. But under the CARES Act, you are allowed now up to $100,000 without penalty or deferring that tax over a number of years based on a hardship. So basically, you have to say, I have a hardship due to COVID. Everyone has. And you are now able to move that money around out of that 401k. This is one of the gifts of the CARES Act that people aren't talking about. So please, 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 move that money around intelligently. Like, for instance, we just helped a client at our company, Morris Invest, buy their first rental property by moving their 401k out under the CARES Act. Our team helped them do it. Now they just closed on a rental property that's cash flowing. So they were able to turn that 401k that was sitting there about to be hammered by a stock market collapse, turn it into cash flowing real estate. And they get a huge tax benefit and a write-off on their taxes by owning real estate now. They turned it into a loss and basically into a win. So thank you, Christine, for that question. I think are you able to grab that super chat question, Philip, or is that? Oh yeah, John Shanks, thank you so much. Thank you for your super chat, John. I appreciate it. Guess you could say that when I pay one bill off completely, I would take that minimum and divide it by the other two. So when I pay that one bill off completely, I would take that minimum and divide it by the other two and add the amount to the other two and then pay off all my debt before June of 2021. Way to go, man. Yeah, you can tackle it that way. Or if you want, you know, like what I did was I continued to pay the minimum balances on the other cards and I would just set my sights on one balance at a time. I mean, I had like 7 credit cards. It was not good when I had all my debt. It was like 7 or 9. It was bad. And I just started tackling one at a time. I'd pay the minimums on the other, and I would put as any extra dollars I had towards the one that I was focused on until that one went away. And then I'd take that money, compress it, go after the next, and just kept going after it. So congrats, John. That's going to be awesome when you get out of that debt in June. Good for you, man. All right, we got another, let me take Gail's question here. Gail sent in us a voicemail. By the way, if you would like to send us a voicemail, it's very easy to do. Just go to morninginvest.com, our website. Sign up for our newsletter, of course, while you're there. Then over on the right-hand side, click on the send voicemail option. See on the far right side of the screen right there? Click on that. You can record like a 30-second voice message right there and send it in to us. So that's exactly what Gail did. Let's listen to Gail.
Hi, Clayton. My name is Gail, and I'm from San Antonio, Texas. And my question is, since outlet is not available here in Texas, is there a comparable savings account that I can use? I'm not quite sure how long I'm going to have to wait for outlet, but I've been waiting for 6 months so far. Mm. So if you can give me some ideas on any other comparable accounts, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you. I hope you're having a wonderful day.
Thank you, Gail. Are you watching right now, Gail? I hope you are. Let us know in the chat if you're watching. So Gail, I haven't vetted any of the other sort of crypto style that I even know of. Outlet is my favorite because of the high interest rate. So first of all, Outlet is backed by cryptocurrency and you get about a 6% interest rate in that account. 6%. I mean, when you think about your savings account at Wells Fargo, you're getting like a 0.001% interest. In fact, that means you're losing money because it's not even keeping up with inflation. So at Outlet, that's the savings account I use. It's a savings account alternative. And if you use our link, they'll actually deposit some free money in your account. So we set it up with them. So if you go to morninginvest.com/outlet, download the app, and use our link. They'll deposit money into your account when you open up your account. It's a savings account, so you can open it with 10 bucks if you want, you know, whatever you want. So I have not vetted any other crypto style savings, and I don't even know that there are any. The only other savings account that I would recommend that has a high interest rate, I think is about 2%. Is it the Marcus? Marcus Savings? Oh, it's lower now because of what? 0.06. Shoot. Well, it's still better than your bank account, your bank savings. The Marcus, it's called Marcus by Goldman Sachs, is a pretty good savings account. So that's a good one. It's slightly higher interest than you'd get with your traditional bank. But I know that Outlet is definitely working on coming to those other states. They just have to get like regulatory approval, I believe, in those states. And some of them take a little bit longer. Corey says, I'm still sitting in my car at the gym watching this. Thanks. Thanks, Corey. He says, come on, man.
Come on, man.
Thank you, Corey. Let's see. Oh, you got a super chat here? Let me see. Here we go. John Hamilton, thank you for your super chat. Can you please do an interview with Charles Hoskinson from the IOHK? He built a new financial system called, yes, Cardano. Yes, the new cryptocurrency ADA. Good idea. Yes, that is on my list. So thank you for that, John. I will be sure to keep that on the top of the, since we get through this crazy election cycle, that'll be someone we will definitely want to have on the show. So thank you for that. All right. I think we have another question here from Danielle. Danielle's question.
Hi, Clayton. My name is Danielle and I'm from Michigan. I'm currently working with Fundagrow. I own two duplexes, house hacking in one of them, and I opened an LLC to switch the houses into that. But as I was submitting the paperwork, my loan got bought by a company that won't allow me to do it. My question is, once I build credit with Fundagrow, should I use it to buy more rentals as I originally planned, or should I buy one of the duplexes that currently rates around $100,000 that I owe about $45,000 on, then refinance or get a HELOC through the business and buy more rentals then? Thanks.
The answer is yes. I mean, there's multiple ways to do this, of course. So with Fundagrow, so she's working with Fundagrow. If you're interested in that, you can go to our website at morrisinvest.com/funding, and you can get 0% interest loans. There's a fee to sign up, but you also save $500 if you go through our website. So that's at Morris Invest, our main website, morrisinvest.com/funding. So she's using that to invest in real estate, which is great. So she's getting 0% interest on these business lines of credit. And then she bought this duplex. Now she wants to either buy more using a home equity line of credit from the duplexes to pay off the Fundagrow and then add more to her portfolio. So look, anytime you can use other people's money, I would be doing that. Yes, if you can get a home equity line of credit, pull the equity out of those that duplex and roll it into another investment. And this is the tried and true method. This is the snowball method. I mean, this is exactly how it works. Don't forget though, with Fundagrow, you can continue to get additional funding with them like I've done. So the first time I ever used them, I got 190,000. Then you're able to get another, you know, work with them into the next year. And we got 90 the next time and we're able to buy additional rental properties with that funding. So yes, the answer is all of the above. If you can get a home equity line of credit, I know tightening has occurred in certain markets and certain banks, but if you're able to get equity out of that property and roll it into another down payment for another rental property, yes. Remember, there are the three stages of real estate investing. Okay. You sounds like you're in the buy phase. There's three stages: buy, own, and cash flow. Buy, own, and cash flow. Sounds like you're in the buy phase because you're not necessarily worried about the cash flow just yet. That comes later. So as long as you're not over leveraged and you're at least making some profit every month with your mortgage payments, your Fundagrow payments, et cetera, you're cash flowing after expenses, taxes, et cetera, you're cash flowing about $100 above that point, then you're golden. And then you move into the owning phase once those are paid off. And then that's when the cash flow is your focus. So when you're starting out, most people flip that. They're like, I want the cash flow. I want the cash flow. But you need to understand that that will come. What you're doing is you're building up net worth. And then once all of those properties are paid off, the cash flow is there and you're maybe nearing retirement age. And now you're just living off that cash flow. That's the way that it should happen. Ideally, most people worry about paying off those mortgages right away. And that shouldn't be your focus at this stage. Acquisition of property, building that portfolio, and making sure you're not over-leveraged is what you should be doing. Thank you for that question. Let's see. I think we have one more question today from Ethan. Let's listen to Ethan's question.
Hey, Clayton. I'm a fan of your show. I'm curious to know your take on modern monetary theory. I'd love to hear what you think and poke all the holes you can in it, because it's sounding at this point, if universal basic income could ever happen, this might be the only way. But at the same time, it feels foolish to think that now is different than in the past, that the governments can go in infinite debt without trouble. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
So if we're going by like the textbook definition of these theories, you know, I am not an academic when it comes to this. Just give you the basics of it. As it relates certainly to universal basic income, if you've listened to Andrew Yang's theories on this, you've listened to, you know, any other big thinker in the, even Mark Cuban talking about this, people who are talking about universal basic income, this idea that the government could provide a safety net. you know, to keep people out of poverty, $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month. We have enough now tests to show that it works, and it does not lead to laziness. It encourages entrepreneurship. It encourages people to build businesses. So it's not something where people are just sitting at home doing nothing. There's been tests now in Canada, Finland, Germany, and it's worked. A Canadian test is pretty eye-opening, actually. They're giving it $7,500 a month to homeless people. And guess what? These people were lifted up as a result of it. They ended up not spending it on drugs or other things. They actually put it towards starting businesses. They started, they used it to buy clothing, to buy food, and reinvest it in themselves. So the proof is in the pudding on that. I mean, you know, modern monetary theory is basically, it describes currency really as like a public monopoly. And the idea of unemployment really like is evidence that a currency is over restricting the supply of the financial assets basically needed to pay taxes. So we keep printing money and it is not sustainable. So we keep printing money into infinity. It's going to collapse at some point. That's why I keep trying to warn people here on the show. You cannot have your money tied to this government fiat currency. But I don't think the two, I don't think universal basic income and us printing money are tied together. So that's where I come down on that idea. I mean, if you have, the government is printing money, that is not sustainable because the government is also not taking in tax revenue right now in the way that it used to. We're just not collecting taxes the way that we used to. And so the government can only print so much money before hyperinflation sets in and before we have a collapse. It's inevitable. We can only keep kicking the can down the street for a certain amount of time. But universal basic income, I don't believe is really tied to this in that way. I think universal basic income is totally separate because we can pay for that with taxpayer money. We can pay for that by repositioning our other wasteful spending on defense and countless ridiculous wars around the world. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. I mean, the idea is that, you know, government issues its own fiat currency, but all government currency has collapsed in world history. It all has. If you think that the United States dollar is above that, you're crazy. Every world currency has collapsed. You know, and it's this idea, I guess, too, that it can't be defaulted upon on its debt because it's our own currency. Like we can't collapse on ourselves because it's our own currency. I just don't know how that's possible. I don't know how anyone can rationalize that. I know the Federal Reserve's like, hey, we can just keep borrowing. Our borrowing capacity is almost infinite at this point. We can just keep printing money and just borrowing like crazy. We're great. Interest rates are so low, we can just keep going. I don't know how that's possible. It's like they live in a sort of a weird black hole. Maybe there's people smarter out there that think, you know, that know something that we don't, that you can just keep printing money forever and then everything's fine. I don't know how people can think that though. This debasing of the currency, you know, that's why the US dollar keeps going down in value. It's going to go down. It's going to continue to go down. So again, if you've got your money tied to US currency instead of tangibles like real estate, or gold, silver, frankly, even Bitcoin, which is not debased and not tied to a central government, it's scary. It's scary, my friends. There's a good book that someone had recommended to me. I have it in my my notes. It's called Credit Theory of Money, if you want more information on that. Book I just started, too. I wish I had it in front of me, but I don't. But you can check out some of that stuff as well if you're interested in going deeper in that. You know, one other thing just about this monetary policy point that I think is important is this, you know, this idea that that hyperinflation only, or, you know, a massive amount of inflation only happens when you have full employment. Like there's no jobs left. Everyone's employed. Right. So you're going to have crazy inflation. Just don't see it happening. I mean, we got very, very close to that, right? But see, like, by what measure is everyone employed? Because if we go by the number that the government gives us, 3.5%, that's our job number, you know, 3.5%. We kept hearing that from President Trump. Everyone's employed. 3.5%, best economy in American history. Not true. Because of how many people have been pushed out of the labor force altogether and who aren't even counted in those numbers. And inflation was around still below 2%. So something's off. This idea that everyone's employed and inflation goes up. How about we keep printing money so much that inflation goes up and people are unemployed? Much more worried about that than everyone being employed. And we have to deal with inflation because now everyone's got money. So the value of money's down. Okay. Wake me when we get there. Pinch me when we get to that world where everyone has a job and the value of the U.S. dollar goes down. We're worried about that. The value of the U.S. dollar continues to go down even with massive unemployment. So wake me in this magical time when everyone's employed. I'd love to see that. We can test this out. We can test out these theories. Big thinkers. I love this stuff. Well, thank you everyone for your questions. Thank you, Ethan, Kimberly, John, Gail, Danielle, for monetary policy questions to real estate today. I really appreciate it, everyone. Again, download our free bootcamp. Don't forget to download it. You know, it's totally free. So just go to morninginvest.com/bootcamp. It'll really help you out. I think even if you have all of your financial ducks in a row, you'll learn a few things from going through it week to week. It's a 90-day boot camp. And week to week, we give you new exercises that you need to do with your worksheets. And it's totally free. We worked very hard on it. And you can download the PDF. I think it's like 20 pages. So go check it out by morninginvest.com/bootcamp. And how many of you, we've got 3,000 of you watching right now before we wrap things up. How many of you are subscribed to our daily newsletter? Again, we work very hard on that as well. Go to morninginvest.com. It's our website. Subscribe. It's delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. Leave us a voicemail there too. So here's our website, Morning Invest. Just subscribe. Yeah, that's a good idea. So Philip reminded me, if you didn't get a chance to ask your question, or if we didn't see your question, don't be offended. We try to get to all of them. And I will read them afterwards if I don't see them now, and I will try to respond. So just leave a comment in the show description below, not just in the live chat, but we actually have a comments field, you know, in the YouTube video. So you can leave a question there and we will try to get to it. And I will try to respond. So thank you, everyone. Hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for all of your support. And yeah, have a wonderful weekend and I hope you have a wonderful Sunday. Bye now.
Of your quiver, you're not ruling anything out.
Good morning. Sunday morning.